Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our subject is osteoporosis and how you can build bone quality through natural means or, if necessary, through medications. We're talking to the author, Dr. Lanny Simpson. She is a chiropractic physician, and she's also a certified clinical bone densitometrist, so she knows a heck of a lot about the testing and analysis. In part one, we talked about some of the downsides of testing. In part two, we'll continue on that theme, but we'll also talk a little bit about solutions. We also made the point in part one that your bone density score is not necessarily your fate in terms of osteoporosis. Pretty good indication and corresponds often to your risk, but sometimes there's discordance. So density is not destiny, to coin a phrase. And Dr. Simpson, you were making a point earlier about the testing. So continue on that theme, please.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to say that if they wanted to do the online testing, they could do FRAX, but I think a better tool is the American Bone Health. And they can go online and answer. There's more questions involved, including celiac and some other things that get, I think it's a better representation of their tenure probability of getting a fracture. So I like that tool better.
Good. Okay. So there are other methods. And so let's talk a little bit about the medications, because you're not inalterably opposed to medications. I think no sensible person can sweep away the medications and say they're all bad. But let's talk about the pros and cons of some of the commonly prescribed medications. The first category is the bisphosphonates. What's up with those? There's been some doubt cast about their safety and efficacy lately.
Yeah, well, of course, almost all drugs that are out there, probably 98%, if not more, people who are on medications are on a category of drugs called anti-resorptive. And that means that they impact the osteoclasts, which are bone cells that get rid of old bone. So one way or another, they do that, whether it's a pre-osteoclast or whether it's the osteoclast itself. And our bones stay healthy by maintaining or having a healthy amount, if you will, of the osteoclast, because they get rid of old bone. And our bodies stay healthy, and every 7 years, although that's not quite 7 years as we're getting older, they get rid of old bone and it lays down new bone, just doesn't do it as effectively as we get older. So the bisphosphonates can slow down bone loss, and for about 6 months, if it's the right person, and I want to say it that way, you can see an actual build, in fact, an increase in osteoblastic activity. So they're not, it's in the back doorway that it does influence the osteoblasts, but not that significantly for a long period of time. So the problem with these drugs is, A, they're given to too many people. They're given to people who don't need them. And when they do put them on them, they keep them on them way too long. They're not testing lab. They're not doing any lab work. Bone markers should be done prior. It's just a mess, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And yet I do see, you know, when they're used properly and the right people, they can really do great work. There's no question about that. That's just generally not what I see. It can certainly get people out of pickle. I've had a number of people who, I had one guy I talk about in my book, he was a 100-mile runner and he broke 12 bones. Oof. And in his 40s. And he had oxidative stress, which is actually what resulted
wow.
in all his fractures.
So too much. I mean, obviously, he said, well, I'm a runner. I should be great for my bones. But it's actually too much. It actually stressed and inflamed and robbed his bones of strength and nutrition.
Absolutely. And he went on those drugs. He's big on nutrition himself. He went on those drugs for about 8 months, and it literally stopped the fractures.
Wow.
And then he went on Forteo for a short period of time, which mm-hmm. is a whole different action. It's an anabolic, as you know. And then he has maintained his bones with nutrition and so forth for the last many years without any more fractures. Now, he's still going to have some problems as he's going to get older because he's still resting there at around a negative 3.5.
Right.
And so let's say, and let me just put this point out to people. Let's say you have a negative 3.5. And what that means, again, one of those points is 12%. So we're talking about 36, 40% less bone mass than an average 30-year-old. Now, let's say you take that same person, same bone density, but you fast forward them 30 years, they're going to fracture easier simply because they're older, which is why we want to, as much as possible, maintain that bone quality, meaning what does that mean? It means we're helping the collagen part of the right. bone, the protein part of the bone, have some flexibility.
It's living tissue. It's not like just a dried out, desiccated skeletal bone that you see in an anatomy lab. It's living tissue, and it, as you age, it becomes devitalized. But you want to maintain the youthfulness of that tissue
as much as possible. That's
yep.
right.
Okay. So, in terms of, let's look at some of the other medications. I mean, now there are IV forms of the bisphosphonates. Reclast is popular. People get infusions in a doctor's office. Or alternatively, they take an injectable medication, Forteo. There are some side effects associated with these medications. What do you have any concerns about that?
Well, I do. So, so you always have to take those in consideration. I mean, the side effect, Reclast is, of course, another bisphosphonate, just like Boniva. They're just different ways of delivering it. And what we know about long-term, and there is a video on my website with a doctor named Jennifer Schneider, who was one of the people who had what we call a no-trauma fracture. She was standing on a subway, and you know how when the subway stops,
yeah.
kind of jiggles? That was it. And
wow.
her femur snapped in half, the largest bone in the body. These are called subtrochanter fractures. This is the big thing that got attention. Now, mind you, I want to tell your audience, it does happen in a small percentage of people. I think it's a bigger percentage than what they're telling us.
Right.
Often
these things are underreported.
Think it's underreported.
Yeah.
And she's got 100 people who've had these kinds of fractures in a group. And she was the one that was responsible to get the black box warning on the medication. So that said, she was using them 5 years. And in her case, that's what ended up happening. I tend to think that people who have that, and I've had other people who've been on them 10, 15 years with no problem.
Right.
But, who's that going to happen? If it happens to you, it's 100%.
Right. So. And their studies do show that there's a dose harm relationship. In other words, the longer you're on them, the greater your risk of these atypical pathological fractures. And it begins, I believe, relatively short period of time after beginning the use of this, maybe 2 or 3 years after beginning.
And you can follow people with bone markers to see whether or not they're having the desired effect.
Huh.
And if they're not, and when it stops having the desired
right.
effect, in other words, if you had an NTX that was really high and you brought it down,
right.
That's fine, but usually they don't follow patients.
Well, let me ask you this. I have heard that with the NTX or the CTX, these are the urine or blood tests that measure loss of not just calcium, but also the bone matrix is actually being measured in the urine as a degradation product because it's being released by bone that's giving it up. That if it's high, that's no good. If it's in the middle, that's okay. If it's very low, it suggests that you might be at higher risk for pathological fracture because you've completely shut down your osteoclasts. I've heard that. Is that been demonstrated?
I don't think that's been demonstrated.
Okay.
Not fully. I think it's an interesting idea. And I would suggest that could possibly be true. It makes some it definitely.
It's a hypothesis, not a proven fact.
It's a hypothesis.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you use the test basically to assess the efficacy of the treatment. You want to make sure that the treatment is doing something, that it's slowing the loss of bone, and that's why you use these marker tests because you can't do bone densities every 6 months. Too much radiation, and you won't see enough change. So you have to do interim tests to kind of see how we're doing. Get a report card.
Absolutely. In fact, you need to usually wait about 2 years to get beyond that least significant change. Now, I will order a test in a year, but I have to suppose that I'm going to be seeing more than a 4% loss for me to make that determination. And the case that might be true in is, say, primary hyperparathyroidism or secondary hyperparathyroidism due to kidney or whatever issues. And so, in other words, if I think that person is really dumping out a lot of bone, I might order one a year later, but usually it's 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now there's another medication that's being offered. It's Prolia. We actually didn't talk about Forteo. It's a daily self-injected medication. But Prolia, that's a really new, fancy, expensive medication that's being touted and I think, in my opinion, being prescribed a little bit too indiscriminately because it's new and powerful and why go there?
new kids on the block. Here's the deal. It works on a pre-osteoclast. Ultimately, it's going to be the same thing. Here's the real sad part, is that people who are reading about these, the bisphosphonates, they've been on them 10 years. They're scared. They want to get off those drugs because they're concerned about their bone quality. They go to their doctor. They say, I want to be on another drug. And they switch them to Prolia, which has the same exact risk factors.
Oh,
it's going to do the same thing. There's just a pre-osteoclast in the rank L arena where it's going to act.
Mm-hmm.
Forteo is the only drug in our arsenal that's FDA approved. It's a absolutely stunning medication if it's used correctly.
So you like Forteo?
Oh man, I've seen it in the right people.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is there something about the timing of Forteo that I've heard that it's important to use it at the right time, that it can be less efficacious if you pull the trigger on the bisphosphonates first, or am I getting that right?
Oh, no, you're right on that. But let's say I had somebody with a subtrochanteric fracture. I mean, I would certainly encourage them to talk to their doctor about starting Forteo right away. It's the only thing that'll turn those people around, honestly. I mean, and I've seen it do absolutely miracle things for these folks.
Okay.
But if you've been doing bisphosphonates, it's best if you can be off of those for a year and then do Forteo.
Sort of clear your body's palate, as it were.
Yeah, because here's what Forteo does. My mentor, Claude Arnault, was one of the people who developed this, so I know a bunch about it. I was back there when the studies were going on back in the 90s. But what it does is it has a half-life of seconds, number one, whereas the bisphosphonates actually get entwined in the bone, and they're there for, like, ever. I mean, they have a half-life of 5 to 12 years. So Forteo, or teriparatide, it has a half-life of seconds, and it blasts through the body, and it upregulates osteoclasts and osteoblasts. So what it does is it gets rid of bone, which is good, because particularly if they've been on bisphosphonates, right, too long, and it's just that the osteoblasts ultimately outpace the osteoclast.
Okay.
Now, that is, if the person and all secondary other issues have been handled. So in other words, that person should gain 10% really good bone over the next couple of years. If they don't, that means there's some secondary issue that hasn't been handled.
Right.
Now, that said, you have to follow that drug with a bisphosphonate or Forteo for a couple of years, or it will not stick. You cannot just use Forteo on its own.
I see.
So that's a sticking point for a lot of people.
Well, let's now move to the realm of natural therapies. And I was intrigued in your book because, you mentioned, of course, you give a lot of emphasis to exercise, diet, certain supplements. Let's talk a little bit about exercise. Then I want to ask you about vibrating plates, because I have an interest in that. I've looked at the work of Dr. Clint Rubin, who's actually someone who's close to us here in New York. He's at Stony Brook. Did some research on vibrating plates to promote bone density. What do you know about that?
Well, I know a bunch about it. I've been, familiar with Clinton's work for a long time. I interviewed him as well some time ago, and I was right around when they had the Jubim, which was actually the first incarnation of it. So I'm extremely familiar with all his studies. I'm excited about it, but who is it going to work in? So if you have somebody that is losing bone from some secondary reason, of which there are 100 different reasons why people might be losing bone, standing on that plate is going to not do it.
So if you have someone with celiac disease and they're eating Danishes, that's not going to help them that much.
It's not going to work. That's why you've got to go a whole body approach with it.
Okay.
So I think the person who's going to stand to actually benefit from that is going to be people who, again, don't have some other secondary thing that hasn't been figured out.
Okay.
If somebody's actively losing bone, it's not going to work.
Okay, so it's like hamburger helper for a natural approach using exercise, the right kind of diet, et cetera. What's your view on exercise? I mean, you gave us an example of the adverse effects of exercise with your ultramarathoner, the guy who had all these fractures. So where's the sweet spot in terms of exercise?
Again, it's really patient-specific. I can do most. I'm 65. I just quit roller skating, actually, a couple years ago. Not usually thought of in terms of people like me with osteoporosis. But, I'm strong. I'm physically strong. I go to the gym. I work out. I know what I'm doing. I used to be an Iyengar yoga instructor, so I have a good sense of, where I am in my body. But I'm really big on exercise being done properly. Too many people can injure themselves. That said, to maintain healthy bone, we know that sarcopenia or muscle wasting often is correlated with the worst of the osteoporosis case. So it's really important.
To keep the muscle strong, because the muscles actually don't just provide support, but they actually send signals to the bones to remineralize.
Absolutely. So being strong, and here's another thing, too. I think if I could work with 100 people for 2 years, just with yoga, I could probably reduce more fractures in those people in terms of, you know, getting their balance better than in
right.
the drug.
And let's mention that. That's very important, because a lot of people think, oh, it's just about the strength of your bones. It's not just about that, because why do people break bones? They become ungainly. They sometimes are on medications which drop their blood pressure. They get dizzy. They fall. Or they're on anti-anxiety medication, antidepressant medications that make them lose their vitality and their balance. You know, even if you have bones that are technically low on the DEXA scale, and you're supple, you have good balance and coordination, then you can avert a fracture.
I couldn't agree more. And this is the thing, and this is where, and I know you and I are really on the same page with this. We're really talking about each person is different. Mm-hmm. It's individualized medicine. I may have a woman in front of me who has a negative 3.5. She's healthy. She's not actively losing bone. I already know that. She's 59. We have some serious, and she's willing to really exercise and can. That's really different than somebody who's falling and doesn't have good reflexes.
Perhaps has a neurological condition like Parkinson's disease, MS, something like that.
Although I have to tell you, I had a patient who had Parkinson's, and she came in here, you know, and she could, you know, very, very, very slow walker. And I asked her, how many times a year do you fall? She looked at me. She said, never. Pay attention.
There you
go.
Pay
attention. And I've got some people who are just zipping around, falling three times a year,
mm-hmm.
not paying attention. So I talk about walking with awareness.
Yes, being conscious, yes. And you know, it's mindfulness. It's mindfulness. And that's actually, you know, what more of us need, because, you know, people do dumb things and, you know, they fall. Okay, so let's focus on diet, and you have some views on diet. Now, you mentioned protein, but you're not an advocate of a high-protein diet, I see from your book.
No, I'm an advocate of a good protein diet, and I think a lot of people, well, you know, I mean, there's just so many extremes. So, you know, half a gram per pound of body weight is the minimum, but I get people on higher doses. I mean, actually, in the last couple of years, we're finding out that added protein into diets, people's osteoporosis, we're seeing increased bone density.
It's less bad than we thought.
Bones,
we once thought
50% protein.
Right.
So.
I mean, when I was macrobiotic, you know, way back when, I was macrobiotic and ate, you know, very low protein, high vegetable, you know, diet with soy, no animal protein. And the macrobiotics would argue, oh, you know, this is good for osteoporosis because it's protein that creates acidity in the body, and we're very alkaline, so we won't get fractures. But it turns out that if you're on a very protein-restricted diet, not so good.
Yes. And so I'm constantly battling what I call the one study syndrome. You know, people will look at one study to support their position. You know, you got vegans who say, oh, you know, vegans and vegetarians have the best bones. There's just absolutely no studies on that have any merit to them. And you know as well as I do, you see a lot of these supplements being sold. They say they have studies, like the Algae Cow people. Their age range in their study is 18 to 85.
Wow. So
and they hired someone to do an independent study of 180 people or whatever it is. That's not, I mean, and then, you know, I just get frustrated with all that. So I get frustrated with the alternative world as well as I do the medical world. That
Indeed.
Said, we have so many, I mean, we've got to make sure our vitamin D levels are where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. And what do you like to see? Because in the past we were you're of the era where we were told that vitamin C is very toxic, potentially dangerous. Make sure you don't take more than 800 international units per day. Are you for higher doses? Do you like to measure vitamin D levels? What do you target?
I like to measure vitamin D levels. Not everybody can afford it. So for those, I would say, who can't afford it, I say 2,000 a day is a very reasonable amount. And I like to see the blood level above 45. So my happy zone is between 45 and 55 nanograms per milliliter. There's different ways of measuring it, but, you know, anyway, but that in my book, I go into that. But I think that also there's been a bit of an extreme with the, well, I know there has, in terms of the, you know, vitamin D world. And here's one thing I'll toss out to you. you know, people maybe have not had enough vitamin D for years, maybe their whole life, given the way that they've been living indoors and the sunscreens and blah, blah, blah. And now all of a sudden, doctors are giving them 10,000 a day.
Yeah, which is not natural. Yeah, which is not natural.
It's not natural. And they're all of a sudden swamping the body with calcium, because calcium, it increases calcium absorption by 50%. I say, let's get them on an anti-inflammatory diet, move them up to that vitamin D level a little bit slower. Perhaps we don't have to give people 10,000. And think it through a little bit. I mean, it really is about inflammation. And in fact, a lot of osteoporosis that people are actively losing has to do with inflammation.
Possibly. Well, what in our diets is pro-inflammatory and what's anti-inflammatory?
Well, you know, if we just got people to stop drinking the Coca-Cola, all the sodas, let's get the worst out of our diets, sugar, even juices, I recommend people get off of carbonated drinks, even when, you know, if they want to have a carbonated, mineral water in between meals, that's fine, but not with meals. So it's the processed stuff again. And it's if I were to say one thing that's probably damaged all of us, including our bones, people my age, was the buying into the non-fat craze and the trans fat stuff.
I would agree.
So if we got people off of the worst, because if you look at which, of course, the medical profession does not acknowledge at all, generally, the alkaline acid diet thing, and I don't think we have to be crazy about alkaline, but I think if you look at a chart, the most acidic things, it's the garbage,
junk
that people
food.
Are eating.
Mm-hmm.
The junk food. And so it still comes down to that. It comes down to eating real foods. And I love one of Michael Pollan's sayings, in his book, eat food, real food, basically, not too much, mostly plants.
Mm-hmm.
I take it a little further. I want to make sure people are getting really good, healthy proteins and getting it enough and thinking and eating throughout the day rather than just, which is very typical of American diets, just sitting down and eating an enormous dinner. So I really get my patients to, eat throughout the day, see protein, that you want to have protein throughout the day. Protein wakes up the brain. It's a good thing, calcium, same thing. You don't want to do a ton of calcium all at one sitting. We used to have people doing 1,500 to 2,000
right.
milligrams of calcium at the same time they take it all at once in the morning.
Right. And there's no way that calcium is going to be forced into the bones. It mostly is going to go out of your body or perhaps into the wrong places in your body. So you got to be careful.
Exactly. Precipitate, and without magnesium, it can precipitate into the tissues. And they're going to be constipated. I think one of the main reasons people are constipated is not having enough, is eating way too much calcium or not having enough magnesium to balance it out.
Indeed. For specific supplement recommendations, and you do recommend some, I think you're conservative in your recommendations about supplements. You're not into, the miracle panacea supplements for osteoporosis. I think your approach is mostly lifestyle-based and diet, exercise. Turn to the book, Dr. Lanny's No-Nonsense Bone Health Guide. And part of our Intelligent Medicine call to action is to check out your website. Tell us what people will find there. What's the URL for that?
Lonnie, L-A-N-I, Simpson, S-I-M-P-S-O-N .com. And I have a lot of articles over there and videos. There'll be a lot more coming up. And, of course, I'd love people to get my book. And when you read it, go over to Amazon and comment on it. It helps me a lot when you do that.
Well, absolutely. And I recommend it very highly because it's a very reasonable and balanced approach to the problem of osteoporosis. I think we are in a society being bombarded with messages that are, to some extent, commercially driven. I mean, not that there's not merit to the use of medications, testing, and so on. We can't turn our backs on what is a real problem. But if you want a more reasoned approach and you want a heads up on how to get a proper assessment of your bone, you can't find a better book than Dr. Lanny's No-Nonsense Bone Health Guide. I recommend it very highly. Well, thank you very much, and congratulations on your pioneering work. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Lanny Simpson.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.